This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowane. Even before the movie Beauty and the Beast officially opened, critics were calling it a classic. Now, several months later, the movie has proved that the American musical is alive and well and originating from the Disney studios. Alan Menken and Howard Ashman wrote the songs for Beauty, Menken the music, Ashman the lyrics. Three of the songs, Be Our Guest, Belle, and the title song, Beauty and the Beast, have been nominated for Academy Awards. The musical score was also nominated, as well as the movie itself, the first time an animated film has been up for a Best Picture award. Alan Menken and Howard Ashman had a long working relationship. Together, they collaborated on the musical The Little Shop of Horrors and Disney's The Little Mermaid. During the making of Beauty and the Beast, Howard Ashman was dying of AIDS. The film is dedicated to him. They were also collaborating on Disney's next animated film, Aladdin, at the time of Ashman's death. Before we meet Alan Menken, let's get into the mood and listen to Angela Lansbury singing Beauty and the Beast.
As old as time, true as it can be, barely even friends, then somebody bends unexpectedly. Just a little change, small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast, ever just the same, ever a surprise, ever as before, ever just as sure as the sun will rise. As old as time.
In all of our projects, Howard and I had never written the liftable ballad, and it wasn't far from our minds to at least think about writing a song that could have a life beyond the film. It was to be a small moment, but a small moment packed with emotion. And beyond that, Howard's lyric was just so brilliant, because number one, you had to tell the story of Beauty and the Beast. And really, it's told, you know, in two sentences. You know, girl meets boy, boy meets girl, and they've fallen in love. And look how different they are. But yet he found a structure and a way to weave a spell through that song and through this lyric. And also write a lyric that's liftable.
Well, I certainly love Angela Lansbury's voice, but what I find wonderful, too, is just that her singing voice and her speaking voice are so similar.
Yes, well, there's
so unaffected.
There's a story to be told there, because when Howard and I wrote the song, I demoed it in my voice, and we did a demo of Howard singing it as well in Mrs. Potts' voice. My demo was more the quote-unquote pop version, or the more just song demo. Howard's was much more in the dramatic moment. And either inadvertently or without thinking, they sent Angela my demo of the song. And we, much to our surprise, got a message back that Angela felt she couldn't do the song and didn't know why we wanted her to do it, because it really wasn't her style of number. And thank you, but no thank you. And I was in shock. And then I said, well, you know, send them Howard's version. and that in fact made all the difference, because that was in fact demoed in his voice. Reflecting the way she would perform it, which was very much a spoken, half spoken, half sung performance.
Now, did you go back and study old Disney films, old classics, to get that feel of music and how it fit into some of those wonderful old Disney stories?
I did that more before Little Mermaid, when I was kind of learning the craft, than I did before Beauty. I studied, or you know, watched Cinderella, and watched a lot of the scenes where that cat Lucifer was chasing the mice, and just finding all the nuances that you're able to use in animation. And I tried to make as much use of them as possible. However, a lot of that can't be used in the work we do, because we now have a much more sophisticated sound effect department. so that where music would do a quick descending line to catch a fall, now it that may be obliterated by a sound effect, or you may have a sound effect instead. So in that sense, it has advanced.
Would you say, though, that there was a Disney way of using music?
Definitely, there was a Disney way of using music, yeah. Writing a Disney score is not unlike writing music for choreography. It's very physical, very much picking up the physical action and also underscoring the emotional as well. And there was, this is a style for the Warner Brothers cartoon, which was Carl Stalling's style. The Disney style was gentler, more classical, but nonetheless very specific and very action-oriented. And there's a name for it. It's called Mickey Mousing. And it's
Mickey Mousing.
Mickey Mousing. And initially I thought that was a bit of an insult when people say, I hear you're Mickey Mousing around these days. But that's, in fact, almost a technical term that people use for that kind of scoring.
Now, how do you use the music, or how did the people working on Beauty and the Beast use the music to move the story along?
Well, first of all, the music becomes, when you write a song, it's associated with a moment and with a character and with what the character wants and what the character dreams of. So later on, when you restate that theme, you're going to be pointing for the audience to a plot moment and saying, this is connected to that. And you can be subliminally directing their emotions, towards a certain way of looking at a scene. Within songs, you deliberately simply push plot. It's always one of the basic tenets of writing for musical theater is you don't write a static song that just covers one moment. You try to cover one moment going into another or going through many. You try to cover as much space as possible within a song, and the more space you carry, the better it works.
So when a character then bursts into song, that's literally then a turning point.
Usually it's a high point. And often the bursting into song can come very quietly at first. Like in Belle, Belle really begins with a little introductory section where she just simply leaves her house and says, little town, it's a quiet village, and she's walking along. And then when she actually gets into town, there's this burst of energy as the people lean out their windows and say, bonjour.
Little town, it's a quiet village. Every day, like the one before. Little town, full of little people, waking up to say,
bonjour!
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 There goes the baker with his tray like always, the same old bread and rolls to sell. Every morning just the same, since the morning that we came to this poor provincial town.
Good morning, pal.
Morning, monsieur.
Where are you off to?
The bookshop. I just finished the most wonderful story about a beanstalk and an ogre and
that's
a...
nice. Marie! The baguettes! Hurry up!
Look, there she goes, the girl is strange, no question. Dazed and distracted, can't you tell?
Never part of any crowd.
Cause her head's up on some cloud.
No denying she's a funny girl, that Belle.
Bonjour.
Good day.
How is your family?
Bonjour.
Good day.
How is your wife?
I need success.
That's too expensive.
There must be more than this provincial life.
Ah, Belle.
Good morning. I've come to return the...
How would you describe how you and Howard Ashman work together?
Howard, especially in our work with Disney, but actually throughout our career, Howard being a dramatist, being a book writer and a lyricist and a director, was the one in our collaboration who would initiate the song moments and would say, let's write a song for this character and I think it should do this. Sometimes he'd come in with a lyric, sometimes he'd come in with a title or a part of a lyric, and often he would say, what would it sound like if we had this kind of music and it was at this time and it was serving that purpose? And I'd give him music first and then he would begin to work in a title line. So he wrote in all possible ways. Not every collaboration I have is like that. The ones I have at Disney now, I'm the one who generally will initiate and pick the song moments. And that possibly comes from the torch being passed from Howard to me. But in our collaboration, Howard was the one who did that.
You called your working relationship a marriage.
It Well, yes. I mean, I suppose calling it a marriage might be the wrong term, if only because if so, I'm afraid I'm an adulterer. But Howard and I worked with other people. So it was a friendship. I mean, we were like brothers. I mean, there were a lot of dimensions to the relationship. When Howard had his director hat on and I had my composer, or Alan sitting in the pit playing a show and Howard's in the back of the theater directing, that was one relationship. Mm. A very different one from when the two of us sat in the room and wrote together. And a very different one from when, Janice, my wife, and I and Howard and Bill would have dinner together. I mean, there were just many facets to the relationship. I loved Howard. He was the most extraordinary, wonderful person I'll probably ever know. But it's probably a mistake to refer to our relationship as a marriage. It was just a collaboration and a very good one.
Well, it must have been a very emotional collaboration during the making of Beauty and the Beast, because he was dying during the production.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very emotional. I spent much of that year thinking, my God, I'm getting through this. How are we getting through this? But I said, well, he's still alive. He's still here. He's still doing wonderful work. And you'd watch as, you know, one by one, his basic faculties would fail him. And he was very brave. And I just never let it get me depressed during that year. I just stayed positive. And when I knew, you know, it was getting closer and closer to the end, I think I denied increasingly. And I cried a couple times, deeply. And what happened was, it just the grief never went away. It never, because it never actually really hit. It only began hitting heavily months later, and then it just has stayed. It's very difficult and emotional, and it is a loss, and it's a sad loss and a depressing loss. Honestly, sometimes you try to look at the silver lining, and sometimes all you see is loss. But the work is there, and I wish he was there to enjoy it and enjoy the fruits of it, but it has had phenomenal impact on people.
Did he live long enough to see the finished product of Beauty and the Beast?
No. He lived long enough to see some telecines, they're called, which are, they film the storyboards and bits of animation, whatever's done. He lived long enough to see that he liked the work. And that was a lot for Howard. He had a lot of questions and a lot of concerns about Beauty and about the structure of the story and about where songs were placed, and he knew it was good. And he lived long enough to feel he had completed Aladdin, which was very important to him. As it turned out, much to my surprise, there were, in fact, story changes, and so Tim Rice came in and we completed the score to Aladdin. Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that his dying through the making of Beauty and the Beast affected everyone involved. I mean, I wonder even just the tenderness that one feels when you see the movie, whether that has something to do with him being there and the feelings that people working around the movie had for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't remove myself from my perspective enough to comment on that, but I know that, it deeply affects me. I'm trying to remember. I think the last number we wrote was something there, because we had written this 9-minute song called "Human Again." It was very ambitious.
And this is
for Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And it wasn't used. It was just too ambitious for them. We tried to cut it down, and we ended up writing this little 2-minute thing called "Something There," which was very sweet and worked. I think as Howard grew closer to death, the optimist in him was born. He was a bit of a pessimist, very impatient man. But in the last year, another side of him really came to the fore.
I'm speaking with Alan Menken, and he wrote the music for Beauty and the Beast and just got a couple of Academy Award nominations for his music. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Alan Menken, and he wrote the music for Beauty and the Beast, as well as The Little Mermaid, The Little Shop of Horrors, and other music as well. Did you grow up listening to American musicals? Was that the sort of music of your household as a kid?
Yeah. I grew up listening to lots of different kinds of music. I loved classical music, and I loved rock and roll, and my father would play Fats Waller and Boogie Woogie. And but clearly, yes, a musical theater was the soundtrack of my growing up years.
And did you know all the words and all the parts and all the?
No, that was Howard's. Howard is probably the kind of person who would grow up and really know every inch of a show. Now, I would know the music,
mm-hmm.
And I would sort of dream to it and think to myself, well, I'm never going to do this. I mean, you know, I always thought I'd probably have a rock and roll band or something.
Is that right?
And well, until I joined the BMI Musical Theater Workshop with Lehman Engel, which I sort of did to appease my parents, who were appalled with the way I'd spent the 60s. And I gradually gave in to the fact that I had a tremendous affinity for the musical theater. I, you know, regardless of anything else I worked on, any other style I worked in, it was always musical theater in which I was most effective.
Well, thinking about in Beauty and the Beast, the Busby Berkeley number, I mean, that certainly takes us all back when you watch that, the Be Our Guest. And it seems as if the cartoonist really cut loose.
Yeah.
And I would imagine for you as the person who wrote the music, you got a chance to do that too.
Oh, well, we had a ball doing that number. And it's one of those numbers that kind of writes itself.
Yeah.
And that was one that was basically music first. Howard said, "Listen, how about if we do a number called Be Our Guest and what would it sound like?" And I came up with that music. And I said, well, of course, that's just, you know, what it would be like. I wouldn't really want to write that. That's so simple. He said, what do you mean? That's perfect. I said, well, it's too simple. And that often would happen with Howard and myself, that we'd write something and I would think, I can't get away with that. That's too simple. There's a lesson to be learned there, one I perhaps never would have learned if I hadn't worked with Howard.
Be our guest. Be our guest. Put our service to the test. Tie your napkin round your neck, Sherry, and we provide the rest. Soup du jour, hot hors d'oeuvre. Why, we only live to serve. Try the gray stuff. It's delicious. Don't believe me? Ask the dishes. They can sing, they can dance. After all, miss, this is France. And a dinner here is never second best. Go on, unfold your menu, take a glance, and then you'll be our guest. We our guest, be our guest. Beef ragu.
How much freedom did you get from the Disney people to write the songs that you wanted to write? And were you and Howard Ashman just told to do your thing and then come back? Or did you have to really work very, very carefully with all the animators and everybody else?
I mean, whatever constraints were there in writing the songs for any of the projects we do for Disney are our own constraints. They're the same constraints that we placed on ourselves on Little Shop of Horrors. And so, I mean, we had meetings on Mermaid and on Beauty in which we would discuss what songs need to be written and what those songs need to say and who would need to sing them. And everyone would, you know, we'd try to get as many people's agreement on what a song moment should be before we embarked on writing it. And once that was agreed upon, we lived within those restrictions. But that's why musicals are great. Musicals are great because you have restrictions, because you're restricted to a story and character and to telling that story. That's, you know, that's what makes it wonderful. But the restrictions coming from Disney are minimal.
So it is like doing a Broadway musical then?
It really is, except you have less song moments and you're investing more into each one.
What about that incidental music? Certainly you can hear it in Beauty. Would you be given something like you have 12 seconds to fit here? I mean, to get from this scene to the next?
You mean the score, the underscore?
Yeah, okay. Exactly, the underscore.
In the underscore, generally what the film is divided into cues. And the cues can range anywhere from 5 seconds to 5 minutes. And I sit down with the directors and find out what it is they want. You know, what do they hear? Well, we hear some scary music as Belle enters here and some suspense as she walks up the stairs. And then she sees her father and there should be a rush of recognition and she runs to him and we really want to catch the running. So you discuss all that and then write it. Sometimes they will use temp music, and in which case, if it's mine, great, then I can just essentially complete what I started. And if it's somebody else's, which they often will do, take a piece of classical music or from another score, they'll just put it in so they have something, which is very important to these films, to have music under as they work, then often I do have the constraint of matching in some way what it is they've been working to.
You call that tent music?
Temp.
I'm
temporary,
sorry.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Now, the next Disney project, I understand, is Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, what shape is that in now?
What shape is Aladdin? And Aladdin's in real good shape, I think. I mean, we just finished our the last of the songs, and I've put the songs together, and I've been listening to them, and I think it's a really good score. I'm really thrilled with the way Tim Rice has come through and provided lyrics that are pretty seamless to Howard's.
Hmm.
I think you can tell which are Howard's and which are Tim's, but they're very complimentary.
Well, Alan Menken, I thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Composer Alan Menken. You can hear his music in the new live-action movie Newsies, which is coming out in April. The next Disney animated feature, Aladdin, is expected to open in the fall. I'm Artie Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.